Thank you for joining us at the Roundtable.
Brought to you by Community Education Arts, a nonprofit organization based in Noblesville, Indiana.
I'm Alice Cavanaugh Scober, president of CE Arts.
And I'm Sarah E. Morin, secretary of CE Arts. Let's sit down
at the Roundtable. Then I did want to touch on another one of the things that's in the Forbes article. They're titled "Use Your Space to Inform Your Neighbors About Your Organization." Well, this is if you have a space, if you have a venue, whether you're renting or you own it. If your organization has a venue, you can offer that space, you know, to other organizations for meetings, for seminars, training. Host some events there yourself. Obviously, you probably already do that. And then also think about, if you're not already doing this, think about renting out your space to other organizations at reasonable rates, especially, you know, nonprofits that may not have a lot of money to rent places. But that's kind of important if you have a location, if you have a space. It's another way of establishing relationships and all the stuff that we're talking about. Then we want to leverage the community. So that's your section.
Yes. So leveraging the community means you're getting people involved in a non-traditional way of volunteering. People are offering their unique life experiences, and it will help your organization maybe by teaching your people something, maybe by raising awareness. Mm-hmm. An example of this is that the nonprofit that I work at, we had donors who, you know, the outside, they have become involved, become invested, and they were like, how can I get more invested? Well, their expertise was they were business leaders. Right. We had a pool of youth volunteers, so we wanted the youth to grow in leadership skills.
Sure.
And so we invited some of those donors who were community leaders, hey, come be a panel, share your experiences, give these kids tips that are going to help them, young people, as they develop. But also, it's a nice way for them to get to be an expert, feel good about what they've shared, and everyone gets more invested in each other and the organization.
Yeah, I think that's very true. And the only example that it pops into my mind, I was invited once to speak at the Noblesville Kiwanis Sunrise Group. I also spoke at another Kiwanis lunchtime organization, also based in Noblesville. And I didn't know, unlike usual for me, I didn't know most of the people in either of those rooms. I knew the person who had invited me to come be a speaker and talk about, you know, what I do in the community with arts, as either community education arts or as a personal artist myself. It was a little terrifying because I didn't know anybody, hardly anybody in the room. But it was an opportunity for me to reach out to all those people and make some contacts and tell them a little bit about what we do. And so you, as an organization, can invite people in to talk to your board, your membership, and, you know, share their experiences, and then suddenly you've got more context. Mm-hmm. So it's all good.
Absolutely.
Another thing you can do is let ambassadors lead the way. This is one of the hardest things to do, but it is important. It's one of the best things that any nonprofit in particular can do, and that is to get a group of dedicated and energized individuals who are passionate about your organization to go out amongst the community and talk to people, engage people, tell them what we're doing. And it's basically word of mouth. You know, it's like multiplying yourself, you know, cloning yourself and sending out your little clones. But it's really an effective way to get people interested and involved in just about anything. We've always kind of joked that we have our little band of irregulars, like the Baker Street Irregulars from Sherlock Holmes. And I want to give a big shout out to James Weston, who wrote and recorded our intro music for our podcast.
Thank you.
And he's one of our irregulars, and we just adore him. And pretty soon he'll be on our podcast as an interviewee. We're going to talk to him about his life in the arts. So that's really important to try to put together more than just yourself. If you're a one-man band, mm-hmm. let me tell you, that's exhausting, mm-hmm. right? So
I just thought of an analogy.
Yes, go.
Would you rather read a book that the publisher told you was amazing or that I, as your friend, told you was amazing?
You, as my friend. Thank you very much.
So that's kind of how this principle functions.
Yeah, exactly.
The way that I have used this in my nonprofit is if I invite current participants or alumni of my program to come back and then at recruitment events talk about their experience, how it's impacted them, that is way more credible mm-hmm. to the recruits than if I'm like, yes, it's great, you should join.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And that is one of the reasons that we wanted to even attempt to start our At the Round Table podcast and video series, because once we get the placemaking series done, we're going to have people come in and we'll interview and talk to them about, you know, their involvement in our projects that we've done, mm-hmm. and then we're going to seek people who haven't been involved with us yet and have them come and talk too. So that's really crucial. I think it's a great way to raise awareness for your organization, to have someone else say, hey, this is a great organization, I'm sort of involved in it, you should be too, you know. So
absolutely.
Yeah. That kind of leads to the next one, be consistent and get involved. You want to advocate in your community, yes, for the mission of your organization. That's always your top priority, is you're advocating for your organization. But you also want to have your organization be a support for disadvantaged, disenfranchised, and vulnerable populations. You want to be consistent and involved. You want to promote opportunities for giving and volunteering. I'm talking about reaching out to veterans groups, disabled, youth groups, which you've talked about a little bit, through specific projects, and either as an individual, us as individuals, or us as representing our organization, we have done that mm-hmm. in the past. Mm-hmm. So I want you to talk a little bit about that, because you work with youth so much.
Sure. It is important with any sort of disenfranchised or underrepresented group, if you want them to come to your event, or you even just want to be a decent human being,
right?
it is good to let them know in your messaging that we are an inclusive environment, mm-hmm. because
safe and inclusive.
Yes, safe and inclusive.
Safety has become a huge issue. Feeling safe, I mean.
Right. You know, yeah. Absolutely. But something that we have discovered in different things that mm-hmm. I have done at my other nonprofit is that if you don't specifically send that message, then some people will self-exclude. Mm-hmm. If they hear that message, they're much more likely to, this is a place where I would be welcome.
Right. That's important. And not to put, I hate to even say this, but we mentioned it before, it is also important in some grant applications to have relationships with disadvantaged, disenfranchised, or underrepresented populations like youth or veterans or the disabled. It is important because the money behind the grants is coming from organizations that want to raise up those groups and want to give them equal access and opportunity. So although it sounds kind of horrible to say, try to get a grant that's going to help, you know, a disenfranchised group, well, it's part of the grant process. It's something that, you know, you need to be aware of as a nonprofit organization if you're submitting for grants. I like to think that if you're doing that, you're not doing it out of venal, you know, greed or anything. You're doing it because you truly have a connection or a feeling of desire to include everyone. I'm a disabled person, and so it's very near and dear to my heart to try to make sure that the things that we do are accessible to all. Mm-hmm. I've built wheelchair ramps to buildings to make sure it's accessible to all. So, and it's not a bad thing, it's a good thing. Right. And mutually beneficial, which is kind of like our last topic, create mutually beneficial opportunities. Mm-hmm. This goes beyond any individual vulnerable populations. This is just a key to engaging with the local community. It's to make sure your activities, your projects, your relationships are mutually beneficial. The community members and the organization that you represent have to benefit, or else there's probably not going to be a relationship.
Right.
And you, your organization, your project probably won't be very successful. It's important for the people that you seek out in these partnership relationships to feel fulfilled for their effort. If they don't feel like they're making a difference somehow, or mm-hmm. that something that you've asked of them speaks to something that they're passionate about, mm-hmm. It's probably going to be harder to get them involved. This is true whether you're working with volunteer staff, paid staff. I should say that in your other nonprofit work, that's a paid position in an organization that's nonprofit, correct?
Right, but I work with volunteers.
Right, you work with, so she's got it all going on, you know. I mean, or with students doing a service project, all kinds of opportunities. It's really important that the people you're working with, that they know that you understand what's important to them and what will make them proud to be involved. And I think you probably have a lot more experience with that because of your job working with youth, because I know you know how important it is for kids to feel proud of what they've accomplished.
Oh, absolutely.
Especially if it's something that is kind of out of the box for them. They've never done before these volunteer opportunities, mm-hmm. you know, that for them to feel successful and proud of what they've done, it's got to be a huge part of why you do what you do.
Sure,
you know?
Sure. And any volunteer, youth or adult, if they don't feel that it is meaningful, mm-hmm. they're not going to stay very long.
Right.
Right. An example of creating something mutually beneficial might be, for example, if you are a history organization, maybe you have a garden where you are growing heirloom vegetables.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And so maybe you don't have enough volunteers to grow everything. Well, maybe you invite volunteers from a food pantry,
mm-hmm.
and in return, the food pantry can then take that food,
yes.
and these heirloom vegetables.
Helps them, helps you, yeah.
Right. Right.
Yep.
So it's doing two ends.
Yeah, and that involves labor. So you got to think about, when you're thinking about how can the community contribute to your project, it can be words, it can be preferences, labor, art. I mean, there are so many things that will go into your project that you guys are building together. You can really, it's almost unlimited the kind of partnerships you can come up with, because so much is involved in any kind of a project that you might be doing for your community creative placemaking, right?
Mm-hmm. So some other thoughts we wanted to include. This is now off of the Forbes. We're moving.
Yeah,
away
now
from
we're
Forbes
just
article.
Now. This is just our conclusion.
Yeah,
we're concluding. This episode's almost over.
Another way to having community engagement is that the community becomes part of the art itself. The Book
yes.
Street Review
mm-hmm.
is case in point.
Yes.
We are asking members of the community to contribute the art, contribute the writing.
Mm-hmm.
They are coming to the launch and they are the ones performing.
Presenting, yeah.
Right.
Presenting their pieces.
Mm-hmm. And so think about what you are building artistically together.
Mm-hmm.
Another example that I've seen in multiple communities, including Fishers, which is nearby, but mm-hmm. I've also seen it in Lafayette, there's just a big blackboard. It's just made out of painted blackboards in a public area next to a restaurant, but everyone can access it. And they'll put up, help us create a poem. What's your answer to this thought-provoking question? They have sidewalk chalk sitting
mm-hmm.
out, and anyone can come by, write the answer, write what they're inspired to add
mm-hmm.
to, and they add their bit and create that thing together.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's just yet another way to get them involved artistically.
That's really cool, because that's something that, you know, depending on how it's built, it could be moved from location to location. It could be, you know, timely in terms of what the messaging or the result on the board is. That's a very cool idea. I like that a lot. Yes.
Mm-hmm. I did also want to conclude the thought about surveys. We talked
yeah.
a lot about surveys going into the project,
mm-hmm.
but also surveying after the mm-hmm. project. If you're going to do it year after year, because sometimes it takes a while to get going,
yeah.
you know, what worked well? Find that out from the people who actually took part in it or who witnessed it,
mm-hmm.
who were your audience. What can you tweak? It's only going to make you stronger.
Right.
Right.
Right. We did that. I can't remember if it was last year or the year before. I think it was last year after the 2019 book launch for the Polk Street Review publication, and I sent out an email to the people who presented, And some of the people that I knew personally who had attended, we didn't make people write down their email addresses when they walked in the door, so I couldn't send it to everyone who attended. But and I asked them, you know, for some feedback, and it was very vague. It was just like, hey, how'd you think it went? What would be good to improve? What went well? What needs to change? And you know, we had a tendency to run long. The night was very long. And the biggest negative was, you know, make it shorter, you know. Mm-hmm. And so this year we're determined it's 2-hour presentation time. That's it, with an intermission, you know. So we're not going to go long, you know. But it's good to get that feedback, because that night at the, you know, in the moment, you could listen to people present their stuff all night long. And it's not until you get home at midnight, you're like, oh my gosh, that thing started at 6 o'clock, you know. So it's good to get the feedback. It brings you back to reality, right. You know. And right. Like I said before, it's kind of like an editor, you know, helping you clarify your language right away. You know, you want to make sure that all these relationships you're building, all these partners you're coming in contact with in your community, that they truly understand your message. You may think they do because you wrote that message, but you need feedback, you know, and after your project concludes for the year, if it's a yearly thing or if it's a one-time event, whatever, send out those surveys, ask the hard questions, and don't take it personally when someone says something negative. Nope. Most people who are going to tell you something negative about your project or your event, they're trying to help you. They're not trying to be mean. They're truly trying to say, I loved what you did, but there was this one thing that could be done better or differently.
Right.
Don't take it personally. You know, they're truly trying to help. Mm-hmm. So,
and another way to depersonalize it, because sometimes I used to take surveys pretty hard.
It's hard not to.
Right. You know? Right. Look for trends. Mm-hmm. So if only one person had a problem with it, that might just be one person's opinion. Yeah. But if five people say, oh, you need to address it.
That's very true. And then I brought up the thing about the length of our book launch night in the past, because more than one person said that. And I was like, yeah, it didn't go long. So, you know, it's hard, though, when you have such wonderful submissions. You want so many people to be able to present. But we're working on that.
The last thing else I wanted to address was just an example of community engagement idea that I couldn't figure out how to fit anywhere else.
This is where it belongs. It belongs here. So, yeah.
One of the grants that I applied for was an artistic grant by the Indiana Arts Commission. And so I wrote a book, and the way to engage the community in it was that then I took the book, designed a workshop around it for those third to fifth grade girls, and so then it was a presentation for them. It was building their self-esteem, because the theme of the book was about how do we value ourselves as women. Is it based only on looks? Is it based on our talents? What makes us of value as women? And so that was getting them engaged by a hands-on workshop, by then getting them to improve their own self-esteem and self-worth. And so that's just another creative way that, hey, might work for somebody out there.
Yeah, you never know. And workshops in general are a really good way to, like, explore possibilities of engagement, because it's almost like you never know what type of workshop is really going to hit a chord with people, and you'll have a lot of response. Or you think you've got a great idea for a workshop and nobody shows up, you know. So you really, workshops, we'll try to talk about those in the future. We're pretty much done with this episode. We hope you'll stick with us for a couple more episodes on creative placemaking. Next time we're going to talk about helping you identify elements for your creative placemaking project. You may already have something in mind. You may have no clue what you want to do. So we're going to get started on talking about that next time. Mm-hmm. Thank you so much for sticking with us. And thank you to the Indiana Arts Commission once again for our project support grant that's helping us do this. You know, I didn't say that very well, but you know what I'm saying. Thank you.
Thank you. See you next time.
Yes.
This has been At the Roundtable with Alice
and Sarah E.
of Community Education Arts.
Our nonprofit organization is based in Noblesville, Indiana. You can find us online at cearts.org.
This activity made possible in part with support from the Indiana Arts Commission and the National Endowment for the Arts, a federal agency.
We'd like to thank James Weston for writing our intro music and for his technical savvy.
Join us next time
at the Roundtable.